You ever work hard at something, desiring to achieve something that you might become somebody? Sure, that's kind of summary of life to some degree. I'll never forget when I was in the seventh grade and my stepfather said, "Come go to work with me. I'll train you." And it was like summer. I mean, like we just got out of school. Like everybody else was down at Hastings Lake. And you want me to go to work? And I did. And he taught me to nail shingles on a roof and shake cedar shakes on a wall. I'll never forget, and I don't know why this comes to my mind, but I was on a roof, and I was watching these guys, and I was kind of trying to be like them, become like them, you know, young, seventh grade. And maybe I'd been doing it a couple years, but I'd started smoking. I mean, the rest of them smoked. So I kind of thought I should do what they were doing. I never forgot, I was just about to crest the top of a roof with a row of shingles. You could see over top. There was a guy by the name of Jimmy that was on the other side, and I was sitting there and I had a cigarette hanging out my mouth. Smoke was rolling up my nostrils, in my eyes, as I was trying to nail shingles on. And so he looks over with his New Jersey tone and says, "Hey, Larry, you enjoying that cigarette, are you?" And I remember I couldn't hardly even see him because my eyes were becoming watered. We do funny things, don't we? Some things are stupid, but we do funny things. And I was thankful for the season in my life that eventually ended in that particular area about 5 years later. But you know, when you're young, you have a lot of ideals, and you have ambitions and goals. And I watched as the older guys, you know, who were making the money, I got paid by the hour, $3. They were getting piecework. They were older. They were making money. They were buying these trucks, four-wheel drive trucks, racks on them, had ladders. You know, back east they used what was called pump jacks that would pump up a pole. And so they had these poles and pump jacks, and they'd climb out of their trucks in the morning. Just all cool. And I would ride with my stepfather to work. But I would look at them and see them, and they become, in my eyes, okay, so to show some type of improvement or progression in life, then would be the time that I could have a truck. So I finally got to buy me a little Toyota pickup truck. It's a part of us, our humanity. We develop wishes, desires, ambitions, pursuits. And there's something in our makeup as a man or woman to desire to achieve, and in that process sometimes develops a pretty high perspective when we have perceived or when we have achieved. It affects our perception of ourself because we worked hard at it, we worked long at it, and we accomplished something. We think. I suppose I have been blessed with enough failures in my life of trying to build something, trying to achieve something, trying to make something, and nothing ever becoming of it, really. The first time I was able to print business cards, I was going to start my own roofing and siding company. I've been trained. It never amounted to anything. Never went anywhere. I put vinyl siding on a house. I don't know why I'm telling you this. I put vinyl siding on a house one time in the middle of winter. I had put on lots of aluminum siding. What's the difference? Aluminum, vinyl, hook it up, put a nail in it, run up the pump jacks, do some more. And this guy hired me to put on all his vinyl siding. Well, I didn't know. You know, on vinyl or on aluminum, you kind of drove the nails home. Hold the siding on. Well, on vinyl, you don't do that. But I did. It was in the dead of winter. And when the sun hit the house, it was one giant wrinkle. That siding buckled and, you know, expanded in the heat, pushed against all those nails, and it was a mess. That was kind of the extent of my roofing and siding business. And I've had enough situations in life, I think, that it has been a blessing to me. I hope that it has affected my personal concept of self, that I've realized that anything that was ever achieved or became fruitful for me was the hand of God. It was the blessing of the Lord. And I give him glory for that. Now, woe to the man who has achieved too much, too quick. Let's go to the book of 2 Chronicles, chapter 32, at verse 20. There was a battle. There was an enemy, Assyria, who were opposed at Jerusalem. And they had been taunting the armies of Jerusalem, the armies of Israel. They were communicating at the walls. They were writing letters. They were speaking all these things about their God. Your God is not able to deliver you. Nobody has ever been able to deliver anybody out of our hand. We are going to mash you. We are going to stomp you. We are going to beat you. We are going to kill you. And they taunted them and taunted them and taunted them and taunted them. You ever felt intimidated? Let me share just a little story with you here. Let me humor you a little bit. Back to school, 9th grade. There's a friend that I'm hanging around with. Some of you saw my post. Woody Marcoux. Woody was muscle bound. Woody was tough. I was skinny as a rail. And he would kind of, you know, always giving it one of these and, you know, jabbing me and, you know, and I'd just distance him. But I don't know why. I just kept hanging around him. Well, we were in gym class one time, and we came in from class and went into the locker room to change. And about the time I got to my locker, Woody stood up, and he gave me one of these judo kick and judo punch, and I was down on the floor. Concrete, fell over the rail. It happened so quick, and I was helpless. The guy was tough, and I was not. Well, there was another guy by the name of Tom Bohm. Tom Bohm had just moved in from the Bronx, New York. And Tom had walked around the corner just about the time I hit the floor. And he saw. Well, Tom kind of liked me. And so he came and he took Woody by the throat. And he shoved him in a locker. And said, "Don't you ever do that to my friend again." Hallelujah. I know what intimidation is about, being on that end and receiving in. Here's what's interesting. I came across that article just a week ago about Woody. I felt bad for Woody. Woody died in prison. And for whatever reason, somebody contacted me on Facebook. It was Tom Bohm's sister, and put me in contact with him. And so now we're exchanging emails. He's ready. He wants to get together. I don't know why that during different seasons of your life, God rehearses these things and brings them back to you that you never forget. Now, sometimes we get intimidated by the enemy. Sometimes we get intimidated by the taunting accusations, and we fall over the bench. The Lord is our Redeemer. He is the Lord of hosts. He is almighty. He's all powerful. If God be for us, who or what can be against us? Somebody is living under intimidation right now. And I'm telling you, the Lord wants you to know He's for you. He's not against you. And He's just coming around the corner of the locker. He sees where you are. We get the idea sometimes in our own little isolated situation. Nobody knows about this. How, you know, if I don't tell them, how will they know? How will anybody know? How will? He sees. He knows. That is not getting through. I want you to know. Would you stand right now and give the Lord some glory? Raise your hands unto Him in acknowledgement to what I'm saying right now. He knows your situation. He knows where you are. He sees you. He loves you, and He wants to help and benefit you. But you've got to give Him the glory. You've got to give Him the praise. You've got to give Him the glory. Give Him glory. Come on, give Him praise. Come on, like you were early up here in the front. Give Him some praise. Give Him some glory. Let Him know that you're acknowledging right now He is your mighty protector. He's your buckler and shield. He is your all in all. If God be for us, who can be against us? If God be for us, what can be against us? He knows every detail. Well, they were in the city. They were being intimidated by all the accusing statements from the enemy. Verse 20, chapter 32, verse 20, 2 Chronicles. And for this cause, Hezekiah the king and the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amoz, prayed and cried to heaven. And the Lord sent an angel. Now, I read this, and I'm not persuaded that, there was this big, bright, and shining on the wall, six wings, that everybody could see. But whatever was taking place in the warring, in the battle, in the situation, the tables were being turned, and the enemy was losing its footing. He sent an angel which cut off all the mighty men of valor and the leaders and captains in the camp of the king of Assyria. So he returned with shame of face to his own land. Now, these are the same ones who were intimidating. And when he was come into his house, the house of his God, they that came forth of his own bowels slew him there with the sword. Now, I know we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. But we know there's times that people are in opposition to us. Their word, their attitude, their spirit. And we don't even know why sometimes. Sometimes we do know why. And there is a fight on. There is an opposition on. Thus, the Lord saved Hezekiah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem from the hand of Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, and from the hand of all other, and guided them on every side. Thank God for deliverance. It is important to know where our deliverance is coming from and will come from. It is important to know where our provision is coming from. It is important to know where our income is coming from. It is important for us to know and to acknowledge where our protection comes from. It is important to give God all the glory, all the time, for all that He has done. Lest we become lifted up in our own strength, in our own abilities, in our own selves. And many brought gifts unto the Lord to Jerusalem and presents to Hezekiah, king of Judah. And he was magnified in the sight of all nations from thenceforth. In those days, Hezekiah was sick to the death and prayed unto the Lord, and he spake unto him, and he gave him a sign. But Hezekiah rendered not again according to the benefit done unto him, for his heart was lifted up. Therefore, there was wrath upon him and upon Judah and Jerusalem. I don't know when it really begins, how it all transpires that an individual becomes lifted up in themselves. Sometimes you can see this in a very small child, almost like it's a part of their nature. In others, it's a process of achievement, goal setting, goal achieving, being productive and producing, fruitful, and coming to the place of believing it was all because of what I did. Do you really think a long-haired kid in a garage in California could produce something that is in Redmond, Washington, and now impacting the entire world? Do you think that's all done by an individual because he's some wizard? No. We are accountable for that which is put into our hand. Whatever passes through our hand, whatever thing that He has connected us to that has become productive and fruitful, we have to give God all the glory. All the glory. He was lifted up in his heart, and therefore the wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem, notwithstanding. You know, everybody faces this. Everybody faces this at times in your life when we begin to walk in a perspective and think, I'm doing this on my own. I've achieved this on my own. And the Lord had a way of humbling. It's interesting how people respond to the things that are there to produce humility. Humility is fruitful. Humility is positive. And the very circumstances that would bring us to a place of humility are a good thing. What's interesting is every person faces the choice on which direction they go with the calamity. I've been thinking about this a lot, and I begin to realize that when some people have a calamity or a failure, they are buried in shame. But in their shame, there is still not an absence of the pride. Some individuals respond to a calamity of becoming very humbled, not humiliated, humbled and broken. And the scripture talks to us about God's view of a broken and contrite spirit. He is drawn to that. He wants to help that. He wants to bless that. I have observed individuals who in their calamity hang their head in shame, but sit there full of pride. And I'm thinking, that wasn't what that was supposed to do for you. Well, notwithstanding, Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart, both he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord came not upon them in the days of Hezekiah. And Hezekiah had exceeding much riches and honor. He made himself treasures for silver, for gold, for precious stones, spices, shields, all manner of pleasant jewels. The blessing of God was upon him, and he was achieving and accumulating, but because of an action that he took, he had a prideful heart. He was lifted up in his heart, and so the Bible says this calamity or this sickness, this situation is upon you, and his choice was a good choice. His response to it was so powerful because it brought God's fruitfulness upon him and the people. Let's pray for a minute. Father, your word is true. Your word is clear. Your word is powerful. Let this word speak to us, every individual here, every represented home here, Lord. Let it talk to me. Let it teach me. Let it teach me. Proverbs 16 and 18, very familiar to all of us. Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Better it is to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. Here's another one, Proverbs 29 and 23. A man's pride shall bring him low, but honor shall uphold the humble in spirit. Humility is more action than word. If you got to tell me how humble you are, if your actions don't bring a message to me about your humility and your attempts at wording it to me, that doesn't work. I'm saying to all of us, you understand? This is how we are. Humility is action far more than word. This is why some people can be so pious in their attempt to show themselves humble that they actually, it's false humility, which would be pride. I pray that God would so order your life to root out from your being, to balance in all of us humility and pride. Confidence is not pride. Pride is arrogance. Pride is self-worship, self-acknowledgement, rather than acknowledgement of the Lord. Several kings in the word of the Lord dealt with because of all that they had perceived that they had achieved from the works of their hand was the hand of God ordering, giving favor. And it became necessary for him to balance that out. He's a jealous God. He's a jealous God. And even though we're talking about kings and kingdoms, we're all the king of our house. We're all the king of our little empire. You know, Bobby, Susie, Johnny. In the book of Daniel, chapter 4, verse 24, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon, biggest empire in the world. Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and he sought for somebody to help him with this, and nobody could help him. And finally, Daniel came upon the scene, and Daniel communicated to Nebuchadnezzar, interpretation of it. He said, this is the interpretation, verse 24, you there? O king, this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and give it to whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee after that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. I find it interesting that the Lord brought a dream to this man and began to relay to him his demise. You're about to lose everything. And when I've taken everything away, you're going to be in the field like an animal eating grass. For 7 years, you're going to be there. Until you know, until you get the revelation, until you embrace with your heart, mind, and spirit that I am God and that I ruleth in the affairs of men. You have to understand, this man was ruling the largest empire in the world. But I find it also so very interesting that he said, but after that, we're going to leave the root. We're going to cut down the tree. We're going to cut off the branches. Everything is going to be a loss. But we're going to leave the root in the ground because it's going to return. And you hear Nebuchadnezzar relaying this to a people, telling him the story about what happened. Daniel 4 and 28. All this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar at the end of 12 months. He walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon, and the king spake and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. Verse 33, the same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men, did eat grass as oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. And at the end of the days of I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me. I blessed the Most High. I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion. His kingdom is generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He doth according to his will in the army of heaven among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, What dost thou? At the same time, my reason returned unto me. It is amazing how far sometimes it has to go for individuals that they just lose their mind. He was out of his mind, and it was the grace of God that it came back to him. Now, this is all because he took the credit, was built up in himself, lifted up in his heart. At the same time, my reason returned unto me for the glory of my kingdom. Mine honor and brightness returned unto me. My counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. That is a miracle of miracles. Why is it that God would take the highest ranking individual in the earth at that time and take him so very low to the place that he would not just lose his job or lose his house or lose his health, but lose his mind and be in a field like an animal and for 7 years and preserve the story and then have him come to his senses, but with a change of perspective? This is the beauty of a cataclysmic event. Changing our perspective on a situation, bringing us understanding to see it with a different view, a righted view, a corrected view. Humility is an adjustment on my perspective of me. But the Lord did this in the earth and then brought the man back into right thinking and then gave him favor of other wise men, drew them unto him. And then all of a sudden, or maybe it wasn't sudden, but the Lord began to add unto him and bring him back into a place of majesty, power, leadership. That's a miracle. But this is preserved in time for us to know that he sees our affairs. He sees where we are. And when our attitude is made right, or maintained right, and our perspective towards him is right and correct, he is able to do anything. He can bring somebody from the field and put them in a throne. We on our job sometimes, we think, nobody knows about poor old me. I'm way out here, and what about? I'll tell you what, maintain a right attitude. Maintain a right spirit. Walk in true humility, not by your words, but by your actions. Allow yourself to be abased. Allow yourself to be broken. Let circumstances that come to your life mold and shape you. Don't look for deliverance. Let it do the work in you that will position you with God to bring his blessing upon you, to bring restoration upon you. I've never forgot. I flew to Spokane with Tony Bailey. He was scheduled to speak somewhere, and he asked me, would you go with me? I said, yeah, I'll go. And I went. And, you know, the Lord really used that man. I was with him in Singapore. I was with him in Japan. I was with him in England. I watched with my eyes impartation to entire congregations and a spirit of prayer to come upon them. I watched this many times. And then I would watch him. I never forgot. He'd come out of a hotel. We were in a meeting in Phoenix. I could tell he'd been crying. He looked like he'd been beat up. And he was getting ready to go speak. We were supposed to be there resting in the hotel. I slept like a baby. I said, "You okay? Things at home." I said, "Tony, every time we're away, these things happen at home. And it's always tearing you up." He said, "I know." He said, "It's God's hand protecting me, bringing a balance to me that I don't become lifted up in myself because of the way he's using me. And what I've learned to do is I take all of that calamity and conflict and problems and I pull them into myself. I don't push them away. I don't ask God to deliver me. I pull them into myself because I want them to have a fruitful effect upon my life to posture and position me for the hand of God to be upon me." Wow. You're not going to get that at college. And I remember speaking just moments before him and asking people, "Be careful what you come go away from here saying. Be careful not to use his name in accrediting whatever takes place here. Because if we continue to lift him up, if we continue to exalt his name and make a super Pentecostal hero out of him, it only forces God's hand. And he's got to do things in his life to bring a balance to him. Do you know where he's at now? At this stage in his life, after suffering a major stroke, oh, he's still a teacher. He's still a speaker, but his body hardly cooperates with him. Wherever he goes, well, he doesn't even talk this loud. You saw him. He doesn't hardly talk this loud. God's still using him, but he's brought such a balance in him physically so that he could maintain and continue to use him without him becoming lifted up in himself. This is serious business with God. This is serious business with God. And I don't know what circumstance you're living in right now. I don't know the things that the Lord is bringing to your mind about your own situation, but I'd encourage you, heed it. Receive it. Listen and learn from it. Act upon it or stop acting on it. Because this is serious with God. Well, he was restored. Verse 37, "Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven." He didn't even acknowledge the fact that he was the king. "I extol and acknowledge the King of heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride, he is able to abase." Tell you what I've learned about pride. It's elusive. It hides. Until the right circumstances brings it to the surface. You don't even know it's there. It's elusive. In the fifth chapter of Daniel, we have another king, the son of Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar. And I don't know how he didn't get it, but somewhere in the process of time, he threw a party and said, "Hey, man, somebody go get the goblets, man. Somebody go get the, you know, all that temple furniture. Get, you know, let's get some wine. Let's party. Let's drink out of these holy cups." And did. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, you know, this guy had a dream too. Or no, they weren't dreaming. They were all sitting there having their deal, and a finger started writing on the wall. Many, many tekel farsum. What is that? Nobody could tell them. Somebody brought Daniel to the scene, and Daniel said to them, "Let thy gifts," you know, he said, "I'll give you clothing in purple and all this stuff. Let thy gifts be to thyself, and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king and make known to him the interpretation." Listen to this. "O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar, your father, a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, languages trembled and feared before him, whom he would slew and whom he would keep alive and whom he would set up and whom he would put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne and they took his glory from him. He was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like a beast, and his dwelling was like the wild asses, and they fed him with grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, that he appointed over it whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thy heart, though thou knewest all of this." We see the evidence of things every day. Situations, catastrophes, people's world falling apart. We might look and assign some natural cause to that. Some of these things are very remote, very distant. Some may be very near. Let us learn. Let us be aware, and let us watch, and let us learn. Let that teach. I don't mean this disrespectfully to my dad. He could be pretty arrogant. He'd achieved some things. He was the valedictorian of his class. Number three man on the F-105 Thunder Chief as a fighter pilot in Vietnam with hours when they mothballed that plane. And I'd sit in the living room and listen to eight fighter pilots in the kitchen drinking martinis. I was turned off. I believe my exposure to that shaped me in my younger years, at least in part. I didn't want to reproduce that. I didn't want to copy that. Matter of fact, I was appalled at it. Now, he wasn't very happy with me because it kind of made me to just want to run around and hang out with all the failures that he despised. He bought a farm down in South Jersey, and there was a bunch of rednecks that lived around it, and that's what he had all kinds of names for them. I can't even use that language here. Some of them worked for the state, hauled feed. Stole the feed off the truck, raised pigs and cows, you know, at the back of his property. He despised that. He planted trees in front of their house. I kid you not. He didn't want to look at him. There was a guy next door, Jack the truck driver. Always had two or three cold cases of Schaefer beer in the refrigerator. I'd sneak over to Jack's. He hated Jack. And there's something about that that said, you know what? I've listened and I've watched and I've observed, and I don't want to become that. And it was almost in spite that I thought, I'm going to go out and hang out with all these people that he hates. It didn't get me very far. But let me tell you something. For all the years that I appealed to the Lord why I could not have a relationship with my dad the way I wanted, and some kind of magical, you know, what, leave it to Beaver type of relationship, the Lord spoke to me and said, it's not possible with him. It is with me. You can have that kind of relation, father, son, with me. You'll never have that with him the way you're fantasizing about it. It's not possible. Tremendous release, a release, relief came to my life at that time. And I think I finally let that go at that time. Boy, this has nothing to do with pride, I don't think. But I remember coming to the realization of what God spared me from, or the person that I may have become had I lived with him through my years. Never lived with him after 5 years old. Went for a little short stint one time, 1 year. I was 16, running away from anybody that wanted authority in my life. My uncle said, you're jumping out of the frying pan and into the fire. He was right. But you mind praying with me for a minute? Let's call out to the Lord. Jesus, help us, teach us, make us, mold us, fashion us after your liking. Fashion us after your liking. When you read about another king by the name of Josiah, you'll read that his grandfather was a wicked man. You'll read that his dad was a wicked man. But you'll also read, or at least this is what I discovered in my research, was that his mother had a dad who was a Levite who worked and served in the temple. And there was something passed down from grandfather through mom. And mom, the Bible speaks a lot about the relationship there, mom and son, Josiah. And Josiah brought revival into the people of Israel and never followed after the pattern of dad. Now, that was at 8 years old. So therefore, most of his life, or most of his years maturing into adulthood, never had the influence of father to him. And I remember coming to the revelation that I am not the person whom I would have been had I grown up with my father. Now, I'm not giving cause and purpose for divorce. But I know there's a lot of sons that don't grow up with their fathers. And I'm saying that's not the worst thing that could ever happen to you. When you entrust that into the hand of God and you make him, he said, call no man father. Why? We have one father in heaven. There is a relationship that he has preserved to have only between he and you, making us sons. You with me? Yes. And it's not tragedy when sometimes when a child grows up absent of either parent. I know we can talk about home, you know, fatherless homes and all that, and everything's, you know, would be perfect if everything was perfect. God can take anything, and with his purpose, he can make something and mature and make us into the vessels that he has chosen for his purpose, for his will. Would you stand with me? I was standing next to the barbecue on Washington's Advance in Freehold, New Jersey. We were in the midst of a custody suit. I was in my late teens, and we were in the midst of the custody suit. We were at Dad's for a weekend, and it was one of his fighter pilot buddies. He was drinking his third martini and standing there by the grill, and he was telling me, he said, "Larry, why do you want to move to Washington? Man, you got to be a pilot like your dad, man. You can do this and you can do that." And he started saying some pretty vulgar things. And I never forgot what I felt when I realized he was trying to direct the course of my future towards evil. I knew, and I don't know even how I knew this, but I knew you just affected your destiny, not mine, by saying those words to me and trying to change the course. I don't even know how I knew this. You have just you've sealed your destiny. It was only a couple years later, the airplane that he was flying came apart in the air. He died. And my mind went back to that night standing next to the barbecue. I'm telling somebody, God has given you a destiny. And you question the circumstances around it all. We need to trust him. We need to put our life truly into his hand. Trust him and believe him for the circumstances, even when it feels not right, or like some tragic trial, or some great calamity. Let it bring and mold and shape your situation for the days following. Be his son, be his daughter. Let him teach and mold you and make you and lead you, form you into the person, the individual, the vessel that he has purposed in his kingdom. This is his kingdom. He is the king. He's the king of kings. This altar's open if you'd like to come and pray. I feel a strong drawing of the Holy Ghost for somebody to receive this understanding here today. He knows your circumstance. He knows where you are.